Saliha Mahmoud Ahmed is a doctor in London who turned her passion for cooking into a winning appearance on the British TV show MasterChef. Then she turned her other passion for culinary history into Khazana, a cookbook of dishes inspired by the long-defunct Mughal Empire. Yes, the empire that conquered Central Asia through North India and built the Taj Mahal, but what do we know about their food? The multi-talented and ever-curious Saliha is here to tell us. Hey, Saliha, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So can we start with a 60-second history of who the Mughals were?
Oh, gosh, very difficult to encapsulate in 60 seconds, but essentially...
You get 75.
All right, okay, I will work to that. Essentially, they were a group of leaders who acquired territory all the way from Samarkand in Central Asia to across Persia and Afghanistan into Pakistan and India as we formerly know it, or as we currently know it. And they sort of ruled that area between the 1500s and 1800s approximately. And the first ever Mughal emperor, which is a corruption of the word Mongol, was Babur, B-A-B-U-R, Babur. And, you know, these are really fascinating characters. Each one of these Mughal emperors had their own characteristics and traits, from fiercely aggressive to romantic to, you know, poetic, etc. But one thing that they all had in common was an incredible love for food. It's one of the fabrics that knits each Mughal emperor together. They contributed to art and history and architecture and so many different disciplines, horticulture, medicine. Their contribution to the sort of culture of that area is vast, and their effects still find themselves, or the effect that their sort of legacy has is still palpable in that region today, not just from a tourism perspective, but far, far beyond that as well.
Yeah. I mean, this is an enormous region. If you think, so Samarkand is where is Uzbekistan now, right? From there all the way to Iran. This is an enormous swath.
And further, and into India. Huge, huge. It's one of the largest empires of the world. And, you know, the sad thing about it is that the when you say Mughals to people, many people, and I've been to lots of different places where I've said, who knows about the Mughals? Put your hands up when I'm demonstrating on a stage. And maybe one or two people will put their hand up. Then I say, who knows about the Taj Mahal, which, of course, as we know, is one of the quintessential Mughal monuments. And, of course, everybody will put their hand up. And it's interesting that the very few people who you first put their hands up will also only know the Mughals because of the Taj Mahal. So it's an aspect of history which we are quite naive to in the West. But actually, you know, if you think about recent history, this is an empire that dominated huge, huge surface area, huge land, and had incredible importance. So I think it's quite incredible and fascinating that we actually know so little about them when they were, I mean, they were the real shebang, you know, they were the real deal.
It's but true. Their empire also ended 150 years ago. How did you get interested in cooking their food?
Well, I'm a bit of an old soul. I may look young, but I have an old heart. And I have a love for history, and I have a love for travel. So when I was a child, my parents, especially my dad, who has this incredible wanderlust and wanted to take his children all around the world and show them things that other people didn't. I mean, it wasn't usual to go on holiday to Central Asia at that time. My friends were going to the south of Spain and the south of France, you know. And my dad, you know, would take us to lots of different remote places. And quite often those places were the territories that the Mughals had conquered. And in so doing, he imparted in us a love for Mughal art and architecture and culture. We had books at home. We had Mughal-inspired paintings at home. We brought back artifacts that were influenced by Mughal design. So there was this huge sort of influence. And Mum and Dad used to, they actually grew up in Pakistan. And they actually used to say to us, you know, the way you study the Tudors or the Aztecs at school, you know, we actually studied the Mughals. And that's sort of where the seed was planted. And food was constructed in those traveling memories. So, you know, I remember being outside the Taj Mahal, and I remember the food I ate outside the Taj Mahal, which was in the form of a chaat, which is like a street food snack. I have lots and lots of these sort of very rich culinary memories that I formed along the way as we travelled. And so I think that's where the love and fascination began. But you see, for you, you may feel that, yes, these are 150 years old and, yes, they have an influence on art and architecture. But for me, the feeling of them being alive was very palpable because they formed the connection that I had between myself and my parents at that moment in time doing something very special. And not only that, I began seeing the influence of the Mughals in modern day Indian films, Bollywood films that we would watch, in fabrics that we would buy. And as I gradually started actually writing my book, more and more became apparent. So, you know, these sort of things are, to us, we don't think about the origins of them. But 150 years is actually not that long ago.
That's fair. That's totally fair. Right? Okay, but speaking of the history of it, your cookbook is a contemporary Mughal cookbook, in a sense, right? These aren't traditional Mughal dishes. The recipes are your own inventions. But what about them makes them feel like Mughal food to you? Like, what are the characteristics of Mughal food?
The characteristics. Well, you see, one of the characteristics of the Mughals was that they were not scared and didn't shirk off invention. And I think it's very important to remember that about them. They were creative. They did not worry about trying things that were just a little bit different, whether that's in the kitchen or otherwise. And so the spirit of invention is very much there in the book. The ingredients, I think, that I use in the book are extremely characteristic of Mughal cuisine, because Mughal cuisine is not fiery, spicy, blow your head off hot in any way, shape or form. Rather, it's this very complex dichotomy of rich, luxurious ingredients like cashews and ghee and butter and things which are quite, you know, heavy and opulent. And then actually quite light, fragrant spicing. So saffron and cardamom and star anise and, you know, beautiful light spices. I mean, the chili that I use is often in the form of, you know, a sprinkling of chili flakes rather than huge mounds of green chili. You know, the focus is on sort of scents, rose water, and there are favourite ingredients in the book. So rose certainly plays an extremely heavy role in the book. Saffron plays a very heavy role in the book. Pomegranates. I mean, when you dig deep, you find that the Mughals are joyously, joyously in love with ingredients. And I think that is the most beautiful, beautiful thing. They've took such care, even with their poultry and game, etc. So their chickens, for example, would be fed pellets of saffron and pellets of pearls and other, you know, beautiful, delicious things, because they felt that if they fed their poultry these things, then, you know, the meat would actually taste much better. The poultry drank rose water because they thought that would influence the flesh of the chicken. I mean, how amazing is that? They also massaged their poultry with musk and sandalwood. I mean, I swear to God, they took more care of their chickens than I could take care of myself in a year.
Sounds like a great spa.
Yeah, exactly. They absolutely got spa treatment. And they imported damask roses from Samarkand. You know, they had complex series of runners who essentially bought fruit all the way from Samarkand to India because the emperors felt that, God forbid, the fruit of India wasn't good enough for them. You know, in fact, one Mughal emperor called Babur, he was so amazing. I mean, this man killed people. He slayed. He was a warrior. You know, he was, you know, descendant of Genghis Khan. But this man cried when, after some years, he found a watermelon that had been transported from his native Samarkand to Hindustan. He cried when he ate a melon, but he killed thousands of people. I mean, that is incredible to me. That to me just epitomizes how crazy about food these people were. You know, they're bonkers. They're absolutely bonkers. It's true.
Something I loved seeing in your book, in addition to just these gorgeous sounding recipes, like there's a sea bass with chili and saffron butter baked in lavash that I just can't wait to eat. But something I see in this book are these cooking techniques that you talk about being key to Mughal food. Some of them I want to ask you about. Can you tell us about dundar and how you use it?
Duandar, let's pronounce it. So, you know, you see these Mughal words. I love pronouncing them because I can speak Urdu. So they are, you've got to say it with a umph. Duandar. Okay.
Right.
So duandar, yeah, duandar basically is a form of smoking. So essentially what happens is that the Mughals would want to smoke some raw meat, for example. And what they would do is marinate their meat and put it in big bowls, usually copper it would tend to be, but really any bowl which had a sturdy lid attached to it. Then they would find a piece of coal, which they would heat up till it was blazingly hot. I mean, really, really hot as you can imagine. And they would place that piece of coal on top of the chicken, usually on another little copper vessel or a spoon or something, so that it wasn't directly touching the meat. And then as rapidly as they could, before that coal cooled down at all, they would drop a couple of drops of oil. It doesn't have to be a flavoured oil. It could be any oil, just some vegetable oil or something, or ghee. And usually some spices as well, perhaps some cloves they could put on there, or star anise or something, cardamom maybe, to give that oil a scent. That's optional though. And then they would very quickly, as rapidly as they can, put a lid on top of that marinating meat and then just leave it to sit so that smoky taste would infuse into the meat. Now, I saw my aunt in Pakistan doing this once with some barbecue she was about to make. And I said to her, I don't get it. You're going to burn it, but you're smoking it before you burn it. She was like, just trust me. You don't know. You just trust me. It just makes a difference. This was years ago. And I think I was probably about 8 or 9 years old when I saw her do it. And at that time, at the time, I didn't realize it was a Mughal technique. And it is actually used, not that commonly, but it is used across South Asia as a smoking technique.
So cool.
But yes, it's quite amazing, isn't it? And having tried it, you know, it's far superior to any other smoking technique that I've ever tried, particularly wood chip smoking. It gives a much stronger flavor, actually, of smoke than other things.
Mm-hmm. And the smoke from oil is very different than the smoke from wood. So I'm sure it's, even for people who love wood smoked food, I'm sure this is a really different experience. What are some dishes in the book that use it?
To be honest, I just put the one in. the one dish that uses that particular smoking technique is the smoked basil kebabs with beetroot raita. And it's a beautiful dish, very summery. So it's essentially a marinade that I make with yogurt and basil and lots of other spices and maybe some garlic and ginger and things. And you marinate that and then you essentially smoke it with coal before... With chicken.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think as a technique, it's extremely versatile. So you can do it to any other meat that you want to then marinade and then roast or grill. Grilling, really, I think, or barbecuing is the next step to this. So although in my recipes, again, you know, I'm a great believer in making things accessible. I live in England. It rains here all the time. Barbecues, you know, are very, very rare. So I thought, you know, if I'm writing this, I have to write it for an audience who can and can't barbecue. So actually, the recipe says that you can either barbecue it, or you can bake it, or you can roast it, so that it's quite versatile. Because when you've imparted that smoky flavour, all you're doing in the secondary process is then enhancing it rather than, you know, that being the index way of getting flavour into the meat, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about tarka.
Tarka. Tarka, otherwise pronounced tarka, is
Let me try.
Go on.
Tarka.
Yeah, very Tarka. Good. Very good, Francis. Okay. So, dhuandar and tarka, you'll be practicing them in the shower later. Tarka is a method whereby fat is heated up in a pan, and when it's just before sort of smoking point, you add a series of spices. Now, this is usually in the form of curry leaves or mustard seeds, cumin seeds, and some turmeric right at the end, perhaps even some chili. Sometimes you can add a bit of finely chopped garlic. And it's a very, very quick technique, so you work very quickly. As soon as those spices start popping and releasing their aromas, the key is not to burn. You mustn't burn. You must just see those spices coming to life and becoming this intoxicating fume of spice, you know, heady spice that's just filling up the room. You then pour all of that hot fat onto your dish. Typically, you apply tarka to lentil dishes. So you'll have your boiled up lentils and then you pour the hot fat over and that sort of flavours them. But I sort of changed, I went sort of upside down on that concept of why does hot fat need to only be applied to cook lentil dishes? I mean, this is a beautiful way of imparting flavour. So I essentially apply a tarka to grated carrots. You can do it to grated beetroot or finely chopped fennel, or, you know, anything you like, really. And what it does is it just takes that rawness out of the carrots. And if you leave it to then stand...
Cool.
It softens, and then the spiced oil then finds its way in through the membranes of the carrot to make them, you know, really, really deeply, intensely flavoursome. And then I just top it off with a bit of extra lemon juice, a tiny bit of maple syrup or honey, some herbs like fresh coriander, not cilantro. And you see, I'm British. And, you know, and then I serve it very quickly. And it's an absolutely glorious thing.
That sounds so great. And that's a totally... like you said, a modern dish using this very old inspiration. Thanks so much, Saliha.
Thank you so much. It's been fabulous.
Saliha Mahmood Ahmed is the author of Khazana, which the UK newspaper The Guardian named the best new cookbook of the year. You can find a recipe for smoked chicken and basil kebabs, and it uses that charcoal smoking technique she talked about at splendidtable.org.